This is the coronavirus update interview of June 23rd, 2021 on Gila Mimbres Community Radio and KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico. I'm Jamie Newton, your host today. My guests are Dr. Jagdish Kupchandani and Dr. Fred Koster. Both are physicians and researchers. Both are experts on the coronavirus pandemic. Dr. Jagdish Kupchandani, professor of public health at New Mexico State University in Las Cruces, holds doctorates in clinical medicine and health education and epidemiology. His current research includes factors that influence public understanding of the coronavirus and acceptance of science-based responses, such as vaccination and mask wearing. Dr. Kupchandani, thank you so much for returning to Coronavirus Update.
Thank you for having me again.
And Dr. Fred Koster, MD, is a recently retired infectious diseases specialist in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Dr. Koster's career includes 50 years of immunology and vaccine research with 35 years of clinical infection control and treatment. In the past 15 years, Dr. Koster has focused on vaccine research in pandemic viruses and severe bacterial infections. Dr. Koster, welcome back to Coronavirus Update.
Thank you for having me again.
I'm very grateful to you both for making time to speak to our listeners every month or two, applying your expertise to help us understand the rapidly changing trends of the coronavirus pandemic, as well as new scientific findings that can help people make wise decisions for themselves and their communities. Ironically, as vaccination percentages rise and the rates of new infections and deaths decrease, official guidance and relaxed restrictions in public settings have left many people confused. So I'd like to ask each of you to tell our listeners what you think it is essential that they keep in mind and do right now. Just a few key points. Dr. Kupchandani, please.
I think get vaccinated as soon as possible is the number one recommendation. Practice routine hygiene, hand washing, and try to maintain some social distance indoors with people who you may not know much. For example, you go to a grocery store, try to maintain some distance from people. And mask wearing, stick to the CDC guidelines. Or if you are like me who does not want to take too many risks, continue to wear a mask in public spaces that are indoors.
Thank you. Dr. Koster.
Yeah, I agree with all those essential points. And I could add a few. Keep up testing. If you think you've been exposed to someone who has been ill, get tested. The value of that is important not only for you and whether you may need subsequent healthcare, but also it's important to monitor the course of and transmission of this virus in your particular population. The vaccines currently have excellent prevention for all the known variants, and that is really excellent news. Some of the other vaccines used elsewhere in the world can't make that claim. But the three vaccines that are available in the United States maintain a very high level of prevention. So, and I think the other thing I would mention would be, don't think of preventing death as the goal of the vaccine. While that is obviously incredibly important, it's also, as we learn more about long COVID, okay, a considerable percentage of the population who get COVID and don't even need to go to the hospital, okay, will end up with long COVID. And so you have to add that to the effect, the longer term effects. And we can speak more about that in a little bit.
Quick follow-up, long COVID, I'll just remark, is understood to mean enduring effects such as brain fog, sometimes shortness of breath, in fact, disabilities that may go on for a very long time. But Dr. Koster, I wanted to ask you, my understanding is that the most prominent of the new variants now, the Delta variant that originated in India but is now the dominant variant in the United Kingdom and is beginning to get traction in the United States, that the Pfizer vaccine is about 88% effective against that for fully vaccinated people, only about 33% for people who have had just one shot. Is that your understanding still?
That's true. Two shots are clearly better than one shot. One wants to be fully vaccinated. The interval between the two shots has been up for discussion and is currently being researched. But the important thing to understand about the vaccines is the vaccines after the second shot provide 10 times more antibody than you need to prevent the infection. So when somebody says, well, okay, maybe there's this new variant may give only 80% or something like that. No, that's 80% of the highest level of antibody and protection. Okay. It still has a large margin of safety, a large margin of effect. We would have to see much less antibody responses. Of course, we only know that protection is lasting 6 months, according to the official figures, and pretty soon we'll have more data in a couple months for an entire year. I'm confident that protection will be extensive for 1 year, maybe even two, but we'll have to wait on that.
I want to turn momentarily to the relaxation of restrictions that we're seeing all around the nation and in many other countries. And I think Dr. Krupchandani, I'll ask you to speak to that first. But one last question for you, Dr. Koster, before we go on. You've urged people to continue to be tested. And I think that would be especially if there's reason to think they may have been exposed to someone who was carrying the infection. Is it correct that we discover new variants only if a test result is among the minority in this country? I think it's still less than 5%, correct me if I'm wrong, that are extensively studied to find out if they show signs of being new variants. And so the less testing, the less likely we are to discover that a new variant has in fact appeared in our region. Is that true?
That's true. And here's a little anecdote. I recently, like a couple days ago, returned from a trip back through the Midwest to visit family and friends. We spent some time in North Central Missouri, which is now it's kind of an epicenter for COVID in the United States. There are more new cases of COVID in North Central and Southwestern Missouri than there are in any other state. This is cases per capita. And as we went through that area, we rarely saw people wearing masks, even in stores. Of course, some of these counties have reported less than 20% of vaccination. And so when they started identifying this local outbreak in North Central, and this was about 10 days ago, they quickly went and sequenced those viruses and discovered that they were, in fact, the Delta variant. And people were surprised because, wait a minute, it's not the East Coast, it's not the West Coast, which is where people think people are coming into, flying into Atlanta and New York and whatnot. This is a rural area where there are no towns bigger than 10 or 20,000 people. A very rural area, very pleasant area. We love to meet people there and whatnot, but we found ourselves being alone in terms of wearing masks when we went into a store. No surprise that they're having an outbreak. So yes, get tested.
Thank you. I want to repeat a question I asked you both in late April, that's nearly 2 months ago, when we had less experience with vaccinations and dangerous new COVID variants had not yet appeared or reached the U.S. They were dominant in some other countries, and the daily rate of vaccinations received in the United States had not yet begun to decline as it now has. So here's my question. What is your best advice to people who are fully vaccinated, meaning that they've had both doses of the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine or a single dose of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and enough time has passed for the body's defenses to reach maximum strength? Can fully vaccinated people feel free to disregard previous coronavirus safe practices? Can they travel out of state, visit extended families, eat in restaurants without masks or social distancing, and stay indoors as long as they want to, hug friends on the street, should fully vaccinated people quiz others about their vaccination status before deciding how close to stand and whether to quickly put on a mask? Please help our listeners know how to negotiate the conflicting advice they read and hear about what can be safely done after one is fully vaccinated. I think I'll ask you to speak to that, Dr. Kumchandani, and I know both of you have spoken in a way that reflects on this, but just to have what fully vaccinated people can comfortably do as a focus. Dr. Kumchandani?
Yeah, I think fully vaccinated people, around fully vaccinated people, can engage in activities. Also, when fully vaccinated people go outdoors, they can carry on their routine activities and follow CDC guidelines. But I personally feel that if you can tolerate a mask indoors when you don't know the people around you, still wear a mask and also know the context of where you're visiting. In New Mexico, for example, I feel much better than when I go to Texas because of how many cases and deaths have happened. The Delta dangerous variant is emerging nationwide. So, you know, really, it's dependent on how much risk can you tolerate, how risk averse you are. I tell myself that I'm fully vaccinated, but it's 95% protection. 5% chances that I could still be infected or I could infect other people. So when I'm in unknown indoor spaces, I do wear a mask. Otherwise, I'm okay in the home, outdoor setting. But yeah, that's the most I can say.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you're in Las Cruces. Texas is quite nearby. One can't look around and say, she's a Texan, that's a native New Mexican, I'll stand next to the native New Mexican. So do you feel that you need to take more precautions being in Las Cruces than if you were, say, in Silver City?
Yeah, I think since the pandemic started, whenever I go to Texas, El Paso, the nearest place I go to, I try to do my best to wear a mask, practice some social distancing, because they have, as a matter of fact, today in Time magazine, they have been highlighted for the amount of deaths and the toll that the pandemic has taken on them, and in part because of policy making, ignoring scientific advice, not getting vaccinated. So that still seems like a somewhat of a minor hotspot for COVID infections. So yeah, location is key. And if I go to a southern state today, maybe I'll have to practice better behaviors because the South is lagging on vaccination.
Let's go into that in some more detail. I'd like you both to help us understand what the vaccination trends in the United States foreshadow for the future of the pandemic in this country. And we'll talk about global trends a little bit later. Today, I say today, we're conducting this interview on June 22nd. The Biden administration officials acknowledge that the president's original target of 70% of American adults receiving at least one shot by July 4th will not be met. The revised goal is 70% of adults aged 27 and older. Now, as of today, the 22nd, 64% of adults nationwide have received at least one shot. That's a real gain compared to the 5% who had had at least one shot when President Biden took office in January. But vaccination rates differ sharply across states. Dr. Kumchandani, you've just alluded to that. According to the Mayo Clinic COVID-19 vaccine tracker on June 22nd, 61% of New Mexicans have had at least one dose. In our neighboring states, it's much lower, 49% in Arizona, 47% in Texas. Percentages of fully vaccinated people are lower yet, 53% in New Mexico, 39% in Arizona, 40% in Texas. In many states, as you just mentioned, Dr. Kumchandani, especially in the southeast of the United States, fully vaccinated rates are well below 40%. Most experts say, and I think you've said previously on Coronavirus Update, that in order to overcome the pandemic, 80% or more of the population must be essentially immune to infection, and that usually means fully vaccinated. And as more infectious variants emerge, that percentage rises. I'm not asking you to predict the future, but please do share your expectations based on your professional knowledge and expertise. Dr. Koster, will you speak to that first, please?
As Dr. Kumchandani mentioned, context is everything, okay? Transmission is between people very close around you. And so the statistics that lump all the areas of the state together, okay, have to be viewed with some care. Yes, within a state, there are political, there's political support or political not support for vaccination, different levels of enthusiasm for that. If you look at a county level map of the United States on vaccine, which is vaccine coverage, which has just been published, the southeastern part of the United States has many, many counties with less than 25% vaccinated. And also, if you look at the intermountain states, the high plains states, okay, New Mexico is kind of half high plains, half intermountain. Okay, the intermountain is also has just as many counties with low vaccination coverage. So in New Mexico, although we have overall a good percentage, we have many eastern counties with less than 25% and many western and central and western counties with more than 75% or maybe even 80% coverage. So there's a lot of heterogeneity around those statistics. And rural areas are certainly more hesitant than urban areas because they see fewer cases. We have a number of counties, well, a handful of counties in this state with one or two or three cases, okay? And so this gives those residents of those counties the sense that this is not an issue. And in terms of that particular county, those friends, the bar or the grocery store may be the one center of that county where people encounter others. And otherwise, they're spread over a vast area. So one can sort of understand where some of the hesitancy comes from. I think we'll probably get into some of the safety issues, perception of safety and risk a little later. But in terms of what we should, to return to your question, what should the fully vaccinated individual, what they can do? I think Dr. Kumchandani had outlined that. You have to take your personal context. And we do in our friends, we do ask, are you, you know, fully, or we offer, are we fully vaccinated? Yes, you know. But then I work with the homeless. I do ask them, have frank conversations with them. And few of them are vaccinated. And we have a discussion about that. Okay. It's not about twisting arms or anything. It's gaining insight into the pros and cons of that. And
so you have mentioned the patchwork of hotspots and low-frequency counties around not only the country as a whole, but, for example, the Intermountain region. And you mentioned this rural area of Missouri where suddenly the Delta variant is taking hold. Given that, do you think what we have essentially is all over the country, here and there, scattered around what are essentially greenhouses to incubate outbreaks of the virus and from which it can spread from unsuspecting innocent people to other unsuspecting innocent recipients? Dr. Kumchandani, I see you nodding. Can you speak to that, please?
Yeah, I think that because we have pockets in the country that have such low levels of vaccination, the other counties where people are highly vaccinated won't affect them. So there will be local outbreaks periodically. And just to give you an example, the Delta variant is now taking over the world, originates in India. And in the past month, policymakers have celebrated the decline in Delta variant cases in India. But as they started unlocking and unrestricting and getting a sense of joy that the cases have declined, within the last 48 hours, now they're looking at Delta plus variant, which is even more dangerous. So they have confirmed at least 50 cases nationwide for Delta plus. And it was because we had, you know, people getting out, unlocking, starting, vaccinations going on parallel simultaneously, but not all the parts of the country get vaccinated similarly. So here too, in the United States, we look at Texas, there's almost, 500 to 1,000 people getting infected daily, 10 people dying. Nationwide, we have 15,000 infections and almost 1,000 people dying daily. And so, before the pandemic, this would have been a big deal. Now we have some kind of data desensitization, too much of a desperation to be free and celebrating, but 500 deaths or 1,000 deaths is way too many. And it happens mostly in parts that are unvaccinated counties where there's a lot of misinformation, no vaccination, no healthcare systems, remote, rural, poor, southern, and that will continue. So we may not see the end of the pandemic nationwide, but maybe in bits and pieces.
And when you refer to 1,000 deaths daily, which only perhaps 6 or 8 months ago would have been shocking to Americans from the coronavirus, those are, of course, deaths that are officially reported. When people haven't gone to be evaluated, they may die of the coronavirus and not be included in those statistics. And there are also, of course, the excess deaths of people whose conditions have not been noticed or treated, or who've been afraid to go and seek help because they're afraid they would get infected. Is that not the case?
Yeah, I think the number 1,000 I mentioned counts both. So officially, we are at 400 to 500 deaths daily. Then there's the people dying at home. And beyond the deaths, I think the people, 15,000 who get infected, will they enter a phase of long-term disability, mental health issues? That is the cost that we are not yet even looking at.
As Dr. Koster said earlier, yes, thank you. You're listening to the Coronavirus Update interview of June 23rd, 2021 on KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, and streaming on the World Wide Web at gmcr.org. I'm Jamie Newton with Dr. Jagdish Khubchandani and Dr. Fred Koster. Our focus is on current trends of the coronavirus pandemic and what we all need to keep in mind and do for the well-being of individuals, families, and communities. Let's turn now to vaccination of children, adolescents, and teens. Young people who are eligible for vaccination, and in New Mexico that means 12 and older, have been accepting vaccinations at pretty low rates. Children under 12 are still not eligible for vaccination, but isn't it true that people of any age can be infected, and even if asymptomatic, they don't feel sick, they don't look sick, they can infect others? I'd like to know your views now on vaccination of children and youth age 12 and older, those who are eligible now, and on the implications of vaccination patterns among young people for eventual suppression of the pandemic. Dr. Koster?
Well, certainly any person of any age is susceptible to infection. We had one in our community here in an 8-month-old child who was I guess it would be moderately severely affected, and the child infected other caregivers. There have been 4 million children under the age of 12 infected in this in the country so far. Few deaths. It is true that the mortality rate is lower in children and adolescents. Although what we're seeing now with the Delta variant is more hospitalizations in the younger age groups, and that would include adolescents and young adults. Now, one of the concerns that's come up recently with the vaccines, that is the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine, is something called myocarditis. This is an inflammation of the heart. It is seen primarily in young men, adolescent and young men. It's received a fair amount of attention in the press. And the concern, of course, attention in the medical literature. The features of this are that about 2 days after getting the second vaccine, not the first, but just the second vaccine, the young men may feel more fatigued and may have chest pain, not much fever, but certainly they feel this inflammatory space, feeling inflamed. and they have some chest pain. And chest scans have showed a little swelling of the heart. However, in 2 days, it's all over without any treatment. Why this is happening, it's not quite clear. This is certainly, in terms of involvement of the heart muscle, it's part of the COVID infection as well, and that's true for any age. The suspicion is that because young men have a very robust immune response, inflammatory response, that they are feeling the immune system becoming involved, intensely involved, as they make this secondary immune response shortly after the second vaccine. But the good news is that it doesn't progress. It's been studied particularly in young athletes. I recall this came up some months ago in Ohio State University football players. There were a couple cases of this, and the Big Ten put their whole program on hold until they studied this. Very appropriate. They did intensive studies and found that the risk, if any, was very, very low. And then athletics were resumed. So this chest pain symptom after a second vaccine occurs in about 1 in 20,000 immunizations. That's quite rare. Okay, let's compare that to these rare complications of the J&J vaccine, which were 1 in 200,000. Okay, if you compare these rates to what's the risk of getting COVID, and add to that the long COVID issue, where you can't work because of cognitive problems. That probably over the next 2 years, your risk of getting, if unvaccinated, your risk of getting COVID is certainly at least 1 in 100, and maybe considerably higher, depending on your location and travel and whatnot. Whereas these complications are in the 1 per many thousands of vaccinations. And the surveillance for these complications has been very intense, and people have been very willing to come forward. So I think the counting of these complications is true and should not deter anyone from getting the vaccine.
And so that's an issue that relates to the larger question of why people hesitate to be vaccinated. And another source of hesitation that you both mentioned is it's well known that these vaccines are being given with emergency authorization rather than the full approval of the FDA. So we've heard some information about vaccine safety now, and I wonder, Dr. Khubchandani, you've done studies of sources of vaccine hesitancy. Can you address this, the question of people thinking, well, you know, does emergency authorization mean this really isn't very fully understood?
Yeah, there would be a sect of people who are waiting for the full approval, but that's not a huge chunk. It would be a modest impact on nationwide vaccination uptake. I think our bigger problem, as we mentioned last time, we have a pandemic. On top of that, we have the infodemic. There's all kinds of information theories and conspiracy, magnetic chip, DNA change. I think that has become a global bigger problem. There's no way the FDA will not give a full approval after giving 100 million doses of these vaccines. And it was not really a quick turnaround. I think there was massive testing on thousands of people. The Pfizer vaccine, 40,000 people were tested initially. Then there was volunteers who were healthy, then sick. So it went through 3 phases. And now we are at 100 million doses of vaccine. So why would the FDA stop the full approval? But given the full approval coming soon, would it make a big impact? I think it will be a modest impact on people who are really thinking hard about the vaccine. But those who are traditionally not in favor of vaccines, are too much into social media, have some political belief or social belief, I think those would be the hard people to convince.
I see. Reopening is happening in the country as a whole, in our own state, in many other countries. Officials are lifting restrictions and encouraging a return to what was normal before the pandemic, in restaurants, businesses, schools, entertainment, other areas of public life. Is reopening at this time, given that the vaccination rate has fallen off, young people are reluctant to be vaccinated, and new variants are occurring which may be discovered because people get sick with them in places where they weren't expected? Dr. Koster, you've mentioned Missouri, and Dr. Kupchandani, you've said just in the last couple of 8 hours, a Delta Plus variant has emerged in India, and the previously known Delta variant was described by the former chief advisor on the pandemic to President Biden as the coronavirus on steroids. These are serious things that may be found out only when it's too late for the first people who get sick with them, and then their samples are sequenced. So I'd like to know whether you think officials have begun to put their responsibilities in other areas, the economy, education, social priorities, all important, but putting them ahead of public health. And to be really blunt, does reopening now invite another pandemic surge in a few months with healthcare resources again overwhelmed as they have been in the past, and perhaps another spike in deaths and long-term disabilities? Dr. Koster, would you speak to that, please?
Yeah, I think because of the pandemic fatigue, there's been a lot of pressure on the politicians to open up, and going along with the decrease rate in vaccination is a sense that, well, we've pretty much gotten this licked, you know. It doesn't make much difference whether it's 60% of the population or 80% of the population. You know, things are getting better, and we've suffered a lot. Particularly, students have been impacted in their education, and we need to open that up. So what's happening is there are a lot of experiments going on. Okay, and we need to learn from these experiments. How much mask wearing and distancing is necessary? I think the risk still presents itself in large churches, in large family gatherings, in bars with poor ventilation, etc. That's always going to be there, and so mask wearing is so simple. And it adds so much protection that there is little reason to abandon that at this point. And so the experiments are looking at, well, do we need to have distancing between tables in restaurants? You know, is that going to cause outbreaks? We have to look very carefully at what's going on, because this pandemic is going to go on for another 2 years. What people don't remember is that the 1918 pandemic went on. It was started in 1918, went on through 2020. It was 2.5, 3 years. And it followed a pattern of local outbreaks and then submersion of local outbreaks. And isolated populations would have outbreaks in 1919 and 1920. And so there's got to be continued focus on the public health aspects of the opening, and testing, careful records, people helping the government identify where the risks are and where the risks are not. It's going to require a lot more involvement of the public to bring this under control. And the new variants that are coming along are only going to make that more imperative, more urgent, that we get everybody's involvement in this. Whether you're vaccinated or not, whether you're hesitant or not, okay, the attention has got to be at a very high level for 2 years.
Dr. Koster, you've said 2 years, and you're referring to the 1918 flu pandemic, which I believe it's correct, globally, ultimately cost in excess of 50 million lives. And that was at a time before there were commercial flights going all over the globe, before commerce had been so globalized and we have many, many more and more rapid ways of carrying new variants from one part of the globe to another. Dr. Khubchandani, I would like to ask you to speak to the same question in terms of global vulnerabilities. You're, of course, very familiar with the situation in India, where you have family and friends, but in other countries as well, Mexico, Brazil, where there are tragic situations happening now, we're aware that the coronavirus is not a respecter of boundaries. We're reopening global travel for tourism and commercial purposes. All of those travelers potentially may transport viruses that are surging in other countries. And in many parts of the world, there's not only no monitoring of the virus, no vaccination, little or no health care. So what can you say, Dr. Khubchandani, about global vulnerability, the implications for the United States, and also the likelihood that we will have a pattern similar to the 1918 flu, where there were interludes of relative calm in many places and then surges as people gave up their precautions? And is the two-year precedent likely to hold here, or might it go on longer because of the increased commerce back and forth, the much larger number of people? There are other factors that might favor a pandemic's continuity.
It's somewhat interesting. Dr. Costa called it an experiment. Globally, politicians are conducting these experiments to find out the balance between health and wealth and wealth and health. But without health, there's no wealth. And the good example is if you go to a local mall, the high spenders are still cautious. And those are the people who can contribute the most. And so we have to, do better experiment. Even within the experiment, there has to be some sense. Like, I think one of the issues we found is that the vaccination drive was going on nationwide. I just don't know why CDC had to step in and say, remove the mask. They could have made it more nuanced and they kept changing their guidelines. We could have celebrated the vaccination and yet continue to have the mask policy for some more time instead of saying we have an honor code, vaccinated people do as you please, unvaccinated, be careful. And I think that's happening globally in Brazil, India, Mexico. There's always this rush to unlock. You barely come out of a huge wave and then you start unlocking. Then you have these plus variants. And another example would be Africa, home to 1 billion people, less than 1% vaccinated adults, and probably the home for next few variants. Unless and until you isolate Africa and stop travel from Africa to every country, there's no way we stop this pandemic. And I think in the grave situation, United States has an opportunity to provide technical expertise and leadership and bring the world together, help them get vaccinated. As the most powerful nation in the world, I would expect us to take a bigger role in global health security, trying to monitor all these variants, surveillance, technical expertise, vaccination, global education campaigns. So we do have opportunity as well. But yeah, it looks grave. And I agree with Dr. Koster. At least 3 years is what we are looking at from 2020 to 2023.
And one might add that this is not a matter of calling on the wealthiest parts of the world, foremost the United States, to act purely out of altruism. This is a case where self-interest requires caring generously for the people who are least able to care for themselves, because otherwise that is where the viruses will incubate and produce ever more perilous mutations. I was going to ask you to repeat take-home essential points, but I think you actually have, and thank you for that throughout this interview. Let me ask you both, is there one or two points that you would like to mention just as we close? We have only a minute or two left. Dr. Koster?
Yeah, I would like to mention something that has received a lot of airtime in social media, and that is the vaccine fertility hoax. A physician who used to work for Pfizer came out and said that there is antibody that cross-reacts between the woman's placenta and the spike protein on the vaccine. And this is because there is homology. In other words, the two proteins would look the same to anybody's immune response. And it would be dangerous for young women who want to have children in the future to get the vaccine. Now, there's about five ways that this is completely wrong. First of all, there is a and this is something that I've dealt with for decades in biology. There is only a 7% what we call homology or look-alike between a key protein in the placenta and the spike protein of the coronavirus. Okay, 7% is very small. I could go and pick any two proteins from pathogens and the human body and say, oh, here's 7% homology, sameness, that's going to cause this vaccine or this bacteria or virus is going to cause it's going to cause infertility. In fact, those levels of sameness, okay, exist throughout the human body and mean nothing. When people have looked at antibody against the placenta after vaccination, or even after the infection itself, none has been found. There are other aspects I don't need to go into that make this a hoax and not even biologically plausible. Okay. The defense is, well, this is the possibility. It's biologically plausible. No, it's not. I'm sorry. It's not.
Thank you so much for that. Dr. Khubchandani, any final remark?
Yeah, I'm glad Dr. Costa addressed this because in my global studies, nationwide studies, despite the fact that women are generally more cautious, they are the most vaccine hesitant compared to males. And I believe part of it is driven by this infertility hoax. So I'm glad this was addressed. And, you know, I'm fully vaccinated now. Women in the household are fully vaccinated. But there were half a dozen people I knew who were infected and two people I personally knew in the family who died. And thankfully, I got the vaccine. Parents got the vaccine, so we are safe. And it was like, you know, when you get vaccinated, even if there's a wildfire around you, you have some insulation. So get vaccinated.
Thank you so much. You've been listening to the Coronavirus Update interview of June 23rd, 2021, with my guests, Dr. Jagdish Khubchandani, Professor of Public Health at New Mexico State University in Las Cruces, and Dr. Fred Koster, a recently retired infectious diseases specialist in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Thank you both for returning to Coronavirus Update.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This interview will be posted for listening and downloading at your convenience on the Coronavirus Update page of our website, gmcr.org, and also on the comprehensive resource website, grantcountycoronavirusupdate.org, which is a collaboration of a group of community organizations in Grant County. I'd like to urge you to share that information with your friends and family and help to make as many people as possible as aware as we can of what you've heard here today. Thanks as always to Marcus Hansen, our station manager, audio engineer, and producer of Coronavirus Update. And thank you for listening and for supporting GMCR and KURU. Be safe and be well. For Gila Mimbres Community Radio, and KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, I'm Jamie Newton.